Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Money is the Root of All Evil, right after this message. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values. These two programs, the income tax and Social Security, are the second and the eighth planks of the Communist Manifesto. These programs call for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing. Social Security is a social welfare scheme that takes the place of strict liability and individual responsibility. The income tax requires of us that we serve two masters in violation of Matthew 6, verse 24. The income tax requires of us that we rob God in violation of Malachi 3, verse 8. The income tax requires of us that we commit idolatry in violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. The income tax requires of us that we use unjust weights and balances in violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. The income tax requires that we sign contracts with foreign and alien gods called government in violation of Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. And Social Security violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36, and Social Security violates the 10th commandment. It appeals to our lust and greed, and then we're taught to call that income redistribution. Now, the scripture calls it just what it is, covetousness and theft, in violation of Exodus 20, verses 15 and 17. Now, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than income tax and Social Security, and our founding fathers followed that better way of life in our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, and that's why I contend that you and I ought to learn how to practice that better way. For more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for the free general law CD package. That's 417-273-4967. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Now, tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can just go to the webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Click on the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this concept of money is the root of all evil. I told you about Dave Ramsey, daveramsey.com. If you're in debt and you want to get out, he's probably the best guy around to show you how to do that. I went through that same process myself. I went into debt way over my head. I was a businessman, had 14 employees, making $250,000 a year. Woke up one day and said, you know, I can't handle credit. I can't handle credit. I'm like an alcoholic or a drug abuser when it comes to credit. So I pointed out to you that when you go into the hardware store and you got credit cards in your pocket, you ain't walking out of there with anything that you need or think you need. You'll buy it. And that's the objective, to bury you in debt in a guardian ward relationship. Well, debt's a bad program. And that's number one. It's not illegal. Credit's not illegal, but credit and debt with usury is illegal. But I want to talk about insurance, because everybody has insurance. I mean, Americans all have insurance. It's a part and parcel with the American philosophy of life. A home in the suburbs, a wife, kids, job, and insurance. And Social Security tops the list of insurance. In fact, in this country, it's called the third rail of politics. Now, George Bush, recently reelected, says he's going to take on this Social Security problem and solve it. Well, listen, Ronald Reagan took on the Social Security problem and solved it for 50 years. He did that in 1982. Let's see, 50 years, 1982. 92, 102, 12, 22, 32. Supposed to be solved until the year 2032. That's what we were told when Reagan raised the tax rates to 16.1%. All right. Now, it's bankrupt again, and by the year 2032, it's going to have a $3.8 trillion deficit. $3.8 trillion deficit. I don't think it was fixed in 1982. So either one, they didn't know how to fix it, or they lied to us, one or the other. Could have been a combination of a little of both. Now, George Bush comes along and says, well, I got a plan. We'll solve it until the year 2075. Well, okay. Well, what are you going to do in the year 2076? Well, I guess we'll have to solve the problem again. All right. Well, how do you solve a financial shortfall? I mean, when you're running out of money or you're going into debt, as far as I can tell, there's just two solutions. Number one, you have to cut spending, or two, increase revenue, or some combination of the two. Well, up until now, we've always increased revenue. So when Social Security gets in trouble, we just raise the taxes. Now let's take a look at the history of Social Security, because Social Security is limited liability. It's the exact opposite of strict liability. It's the exact opposite of one of those 23 laws in the Bible. You see, God requires everybody to be 100% responsible for 100% of his own actions. That means that you have to provide for your own old age. Old age doesn't slip up on you without any warning. You have observed all of your life that there are old people out there and there are young people out there, and you're somewhere in between people that are younger than you and people that are older than you. You've also seen people die. You know it's going to happen to you. Nothing surer than death and taxes. So you got plenty of warning out there. So if you want to retire, you have to provide for that for yourself. In other words, every single one of us, if we want to retire at age 65 and stop working, then we have to save our money, invest our money, develop a business that provides us with income, or do some other event, some other tactic that's going to provide us with the income or the money that we need. Now, some people can do that, and most people can't. So the government came along in the 1930s and said, look, we can do it for you. You can't do it for yourself, but if all of us get together, we'll create a great big fund called Social Security, and then this will give you a guaranteed retirement income. It won't support you totally, but it'll give you some money. It'll be better than nothing. Over the years, we've gotten to the point where we expect to retire on Social Security. It's not just a help or a handout. It's the whole enchilada. That's what Americans see today. And the people that are on Social Security are safe today until about the year 2012 or 13, when it's going to start running deficits. I mean, we're already running deficits that exceed all of the available money in the world to finance. Now, that ought to send us a signal that this isn't going to go on much longer. Then Social Security is going to be in deficit in about another 10 years, so that ought to send us another signal that this thing is not viable. Well, back in 1978, I took a look at this and I said, well, I've paid in $12,000 into Social Security. I started in 1950, from 1950 to 78, 28 years. I had paid in $12,000. Had I stayed in the system, I would have paid in another $140,000. So I decided I wanted to get out. So in 1978, I opted out. Now, that's a little tricky. Most people don't know how to do that. So I said, well, if I'm going to stay in the workforce, I'm going to have a Social Security number. And it isn't that Social Security is a requirement. Social Security is voluntary. It's just that there's a lot of things that you want in life for which you have to have a Social Security number to obtain. You know, like you want to join the Army, got to have a Social Security number. You want to go to college, got to have a Social Security number. You want to get a job, you got to have a Social Security number. You want to borrow money from the bank, you got to have a Social Security number. On and on it goes. So most people just go down and get a Social Security number. That's what I did. I was 11 years old and wanted to deliver newspapers for the Humboldt Standard. So I went down and got a Social Security number because that's what they required. Government didn't require it. Wasn't any law. Well, once I joined Social Security, I got what's known as the mark of the beast. Everybody has it. Everybody wants it. It's the third rail of politics. But by 1978, I looked at it and said that this is not economically viable, that Social Security ultimately is going to collapse. Of course, back in 78, we didn't know when. But I could see that 78 in 5 years, 1982, something's going to have to be done. And indeed, they did. They doubled the premiums on it. Now, either they've got to double the premiums from 16% to 32%, and then 32% to 64%, and then 64% to 100% of everything that you create and produce to finance this thing. And even then, it's a Ponzi scheme, boys and girls. There's always more people drawn out more than the fewer people can put in. Ultimately, it ends like all Ponzi schemes. It just collapses. It doesn't work anymore. You don't get paid anything. So I figured better to kiss off the $12,000 I already put in than to throw good money after bad. So I took the $140,000 that I would have put into Social Security from 1978 to 2002, and I did something else with it. And I'm happy as a clam at high tide. I'm 65. I'm not on Social Security. I'm not eligible for Social Security. Didn't pay into it. Not entitled to it. Don't want it. And I'm tickled. Now, many of you people are already on Social Security. Boy, are you going to be in for a rude awakening. If you're depending on Social Security, you're going to get all your dollars. You're just not going to have any purchasing power, which means you'll starve to death. So, you know, if you want to depend on Social Security, get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. On the other hand, if you took a look at strict liability in the Scripture, let's take a look at two or three of these statutes in the Scripture. God told you to be responsible for yourself. So in 1978, I said, well, let me give it a try. Let me be responsible for George Gordon. And by me being responsible for George Gordon, I'm not drawing any of the money out of the pool of funds that's going to affect the rest of you. See what I mean? In other words, I'm out of the game. You people share my $12,000. You take the money I put in it and have a good time. Go down and get on a big drunk. Go down and buy yourself some marijuana or dope or something, whatever the hell you want. Count me out. So I'm not interfering with you. I just don't want you interfering with me. And you see, what the government wants to do is to make sure that everybody is paying their money in. They've got to have more people paying in than people drawing up. Now, back in the 1940, the first Social Security check was issued. There was 80 people paying in for everybody drawing out. 5 years later, it was 45 people paying in to everybody drawing out. For every one person drawing out in 1945, there was 45 people paying in. By 1957, it was 16 to 1. 16 people paying in, one person drawing out. Today, it's 3.2 persons paying in for every person drawing out. In 2012, it's going to be two people paying in for every person drawing out. And sometime past that, it's going to be one person paying in for every person drawing out. I mean, it doesn't take you long to figure out that pretty soon it's going to be, for every person paying in, there's going to be two persons drawn out. For every person paying in, there'll be four persons drawing out. At some point in time, boys and girls, no matter how fervently you believe in Social Security, you are physically not going to have enough energy in your body to support four other people, eight other people, 16 other people, 32 other people. That's just where reality's at. And that's where geometric progression is leading us. So recognizing that back in the 1970s, I said, hey, listen, I need to get off this ship. This thing's going nowhere fast. So I got off of it, and I'm happy. Now, the rest of you that are still on it, you know, you might as well get off now, because what you paid in, you're going to lose. And there's no need paying in anymore, because you're going to lose that too. For every dollar you pay in, you're going to get your dollar back, or whatever you've been promised. But as the dollar depreciates in its purchasing power, you're buying into the deception. It's like buying a house for $40,000, and 30 years later, it's worth $250,000. And you believe that you made $200,000 profit. No. The purchasing power isn't the same as 40,000 was 30 years ago. Now that's the killer. So God comes along here and he tells you that if men strive together, this is Exodus 21 verses 18 and 19, and one smites another with a stone or with his fist and he dies not, but keeps his bed, if he rises again and he walks abroad upon his staff, then shall he that smote him be quit. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time and shall cause him to be thoroughly healed. Exodus 21, 18 and 19. Strict liability. You cause somebody a damage, you pay for it. Well, you know, people cause other people damages. You know, you're driving your car down the road and you run somebody off the road and you don't want to pay for that. You don't want to be responsible. So along comes government and private business and they say, look, we got a way for you to avoid these costly accidents. You know, everybody has an accident, they tell you, and it could happen to you anytime. And it could cost you $100,000. So you pay us $500 a year. We'll put that into a pool. If you have an accident, we'll pay the damages up to, you know, $50,000, $100,000. And we call this a premium. You pay your premium. Your Social Security taxes, your premium. And then we're going to give you these benefits. Now, normally when you buy one of these policies, it's called an annuity. You go to the insurance company and you tell them, I want to pay this money in. This is what I want to draw out when I retire. It's a contract. Only Social Security has promised you more benefits than they can deliver on. So President Bush now, he's going to take the bulls by the horn, or the bull by the horns. He's going to solve the Social Security problem. Now, that's the exact opposite to this concept of strict liability. Strict liability requires that I take care of my own old age, that I take care of my own damages, that if I run your car off the road, I got to pay the whole thing. Well, you know, you bought into the program. You said, well, I want limited liability. I just want to pay the $500 in so that I don't have to pay the whole $50,000 if I cause the damage. And we call this financial responsibility. The truth of the matter is it's called the exact opposite to that. You see, that's financial irresponsibility. That's because you're not responsible for your actions, the insurance company is. And so for the terms of the contract, what you've bought here is limited liability, which is the exact opposite of strict liability. And as long as we practice limited liability, we're always going to have financial problems. It costs you more than you're ever going to get out. You see, let's suppose that 100 of us put $500 into a pool. 100 of us put in $500. So that's $50,000. And we say, well, only one of us out of the 50 is going to have this $50,000 loss. And sure enough, one guy out of the 100 has the loss, 1%, and collects the $50,000. Well, then the other 99 people lost $500 that they'll never get back. And it's gone forever, so that the one guy who was careless wouldn't have to pay out the whole $50,000. Now, God has a different view of that. He says, you know, if you go out here and cause somebody $50,000 damage, then you should pay that $50,000 damage. And the way that's done is under the bondservant statute, we bore a hole through your right ear and sell you to the aggrieved party. And you'll work it off up to the year of release, or if it's more than you can work off in the next 7 years, then we'll work you for 49 years. You'll ultimately get your freedom. You'll ultimately get loose. But you're not going to wiggle out of it under limited liability. You're going to pay the entire amount. They say, I don't have any auto insurance. So when I'm driving down the road, I got to be very, very careful because I have to pay for every dollar's worth of damage that I cause. See, I travel under what we call a bond. So I got a piece of property over here, and that piece of property is worth $300,000 or $400,000. And I pledged that piece of property as security for the damages that I'm going to cause to somebody. If I didn't have the problem or the property, I'd have to put up a personal recognizance bond. And one time I did that, I was in court, and the judge asked me, how come I didn't have insurance? And I said, because I practice strict liability. He says, well, what if you have an accident? I said, well, if I have an accident, then what you do is you bore a hole through my right ear and sell me to the aggrieved party. He says, but the Emancipation Proclamation freed all of the slaves, and the 13th Amendment bars involuntary servitude. And I said, that's right, but I just volunteered. So we can volunteer under strict liability. It's just that most people don't want to. You never heard that. You never went to church and had your preacher explain to you Exodus 21 verses 18 and 19. How about Exodus 21 verses 28 through 36? If an ox gores a man or a woman that they die, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and his flesh shall not be eaten. But the owner of the ox shall be quit, exonerated. But if the ox were wont to push with his horn in time past, and it has been testified to his owner, and he's not kept him in, but that he has killed a man or a woman, then the ox shall be stoned, and his owner shall also be put to death. Now if there be laid on him a sum of money, then he shall give for the ransom of his life whatsoever is laid upon it. All right, now listen to this. I've got cattle here, and I've got bulls. Now if my bull knocks you down, causes you a damage, puts you in the hospital, I got to pay for that. Yeah, that's right. I don't have homeowner's insurance. I got to pay for that. It's a wild new concept. I'm responsible. I'm responsible for my bulls. I'm responsible for my children. I'm responsible for my dogs. I don't have any insurance. Now, if everybody practiced that, then everybody in America would be responsible for his own actions. You'd have a lot fewer automobile accidents. You'd have a lot fewer insurance claims. In fact, there wouldn't be any insurance claims at all. There'd be very little in the way of damage. That's because everybody has to be doubly cautious that they don't cause somebody else a damage. Otherwise, you're going to sue me and take away from me that which I have. Now, this is where money comes in. This is that love of money, the root of all evil, the love of money. You don't want to pay me for the damages that you cause me. So you want to buy insurance so that you won't be responsible for your actions. So now you got 280 million people in America that are no longer responsible. So what you have now are the insurance companies who then go to the politicians at the state capitol and the legislature, and they say, look, we got to have a seatbelt law. We got to have all these laws, rules, and regulations. And this is where the limitations on your liberties have come from. The reason that you have to have Ranger Rick out there on the highway giving you tickets for speeding is because you're not responsible for your actions. Under the law of God, you can drive as fast as you want. You just have to buy every kid that you kill. And did you see under the strict liability statute, if it's your fault, then the penalty is eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, wound for wound, life for life, and stripe for stripe. So here's the way the game is played. Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that you're driving down the road through Theodosia and you run over a kid and you kill him. And it's been determined that it's your fault. And because it's your fault, the parents say, well, then we want an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, life for life, so we're going to take you out and stone you. Well, you could redeem yourself. I mean, you could go to the parents and you could say, look, I'm real sorry that I ran over your kid and killed him, but he's dead, and I'd like to ransom my life. Now, how much money do I have to pay you? How would you like to have to negotiate with the bereaved parents of the child that you killed while you were driving drunk? And these parents could say, we don't want any amount of money. We want your tombstone next to our child. Well, by golly, I'll bet you this. I'll bet you after a few of those cases come down, there'd be a lot less drunk driving. Or ultimately, we would eliminate the problem of drunk driving because every drunk would be stoned to death, or those that weren't would have repented and stopped driving drunk. Now, wouldn't they? Now, you've been fighting and arguing and jumping up and down, pawing the ground, biting the bushes, and you got these mad mothers against drunk drivers. You're still killing 40,000 people a year on the nation's highways. And that's because everybody practices limited liability. Nobody's responsible for their actions. And as long as nobody's responsible for their actions, it shows itself in your economy. And it's another reason why you're short of money. Because 6%, if you're making $100,000 a year, 6% of that $100,000, $6,000 a year is being paid out to insurance. Now, that's assuming you don't have health insurance, because if you have health insurance, then you're paying out 6% plus another $10,000 a year, or 10%, that's 16% of everything you create and produce is going out to insurance. Now, I don't have any health insurance at all. None, zero, zilch, nada. Why? I don't get sick. Yeah, but you say, well, you might get sick. No, I won't. There's 18 health laws, and I practice all 18 of those health laws, and as long as I practice the health laws, I ain't getting sick. It's the bottom line. When I break a health law, I'll get sick. If I don't break the health laws, I don't get sick. If I practice the economic laws, I don't get poor. If I violate the economic laws, then I have financial problems. I mean, that's just where reality's at. So I save 16% of everything that I create and produce at $100,000 a year. Now, let's suppose you're only making $50,000 a year, and you still want all that insurance. It still costs you $10,000, doesn't it? That's 20%. The less you make, the greater the percentage that you have to pay of what you create and produce to pay for that insurance. The guy that makes $100,000 a year is paying the same insurance premium on his automobile as you are at $50,000, but you're paying twice as much. The percentage is twice. Got that? And the less you make, the poorer you are, the greater the impact that insurance has upon your standard of living. Limited liability, boys and girls, was a bad idea. It's a bad economic plan. Social Security is even worse. Social Security is limited liability. But it's limited liability guaranteeing you an annuity, which is a chain letter Ponzi scheme that cannot be fulfilled. At least the insurance companies can fulfill their obligations. You pay them the premiums, they can pay you the health benefits. Social Security can't pay. And I'll show you what a bad deal Social Security is when we come back. And we'll take a look at Social Security by the numbers. Whether you're making minimum wage or you're making $100,000 a year, I'll show you that for every dollar that you pay in, you're getting pennies back when it comes time to cash in. That's assuming you get anything. Stand by. I'll be right back. All right, we're back. You're listening to The Law Hour and the Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only on the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of our population, with a top tax rate of only 7%. Today, of course, the fears of the early opponents of that tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to 60%. By the time Franklin D. Roosevelt was done, the top tax rate was over 90%. And the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. Now, in 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th to earn enough to satisfy the tax man at all levels. This year, the average American family will work all the way through May the 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, compare this to the plight of medieval serfs. So says economist Daniel J. Mitchell. He said, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. Now, what does that make us? Well, you see, the income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. And the income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth. That's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask this question. Do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Now, for more information about tax and status, call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. Remember, it's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Tax and status is also available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on an email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. I think you'll be glad that you did. Or you can call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, so we take a look at Social Security. Let me give you the economics of Social Security. If you're earning minimum wage, that's about $5.10 an hour, and you work 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year for 45 years, at the current Social Security tax rate of 16%, you're going to pay in about $1,770 a year in payroll and withholding taxes. Now, right here, you're going to say, yeah, but I only pay in 6%. My employer pays in 10. That's a fiction. That's a fallacy. You're paying the whole 16%. It's just that your employer doesn't give you the money. He withholds the money and pays it in for you. But that doesn't mean that you didn't earn it. You see, when I worked at International Harvester, I got paid $3.27 an hour. And the shop rate was $12 an hour. So when you brought your truck in to get it repaired, you paid $12 an hour to have a mechanic fix your truck. I got paid $3.27 an hour. Now the company figured in the overhead and the taxes that they have to pay out and round that off to $6 and double that to 12. Every hour that I work, the company makes $6 an hour, and they figure it costs $6 an hour to keep me employed. But they only give me $3. They keep the other $3, and they pay that out to me in paid vacation. They pay that out to me in Social Security, unemployment, and Medicare, and all these other taxes. But I worked, and I paid every damn dime. The company never gave me a penny, and I was an employer for 30 years, and I never paid a penny for any employee that ever worked for me. And there's never been an employer from the Garden of Eden to today that ever paid a penny on behalf of his employee. Not a one. You employees pay every damn dime. And don't ever forget it. Not only do you pay every damn dime of your own employment, you pay me, the employer, an equal amount in profit. which is the purpose for having employees. Now, if you had taken, instead of working here at, you know, at McDonald's and making $5 an hour and giving that money to the government, what would happen if you took that same amount of money, $1,770 a year, and you invested that in U.S. savings bonds at 5% compounded annually on the average, starting in the year 2000, and you continued through the year 2045? Well, you'd have a principal balance of $282,726.71. Then, that $282,000 when you retired in the year 2045 would yield $14,136.34 a year, or about $1,200 a month forever. And then when you died, you'd still have the same $282,000 to pass on to your children. Now, please note that for the purposes of simplicity, I'm leaving out inflation as a factor, since your COLA, your cost of living adjustments, are designed to keep inflation's effects to a minimum. So if inflation is 3%, your check goes up 3%, and since the rate on bonds or bank accounts is generally higher than inflation, those totals would also go up. So by leaving inflation out of the picture, we get an equally clear picture of the relative financial status without the need to do a lot of unnecessary math. All right, now watch this. Social Security is going to take $1,770 a year for the next 45 years from you. Now that totals $79,650. When you stop paying in and you start drawing out at age 65, at age 65, you're entitled to $500 a month, and on average, you'll die at age 75, so you're going to be drawing out about $60,000. Out of your $80,000 that you pay in, you're going to get $60,000. Social Security is going to charge you $20,000 to administer that fund. Social Security is going to write you 120 checks and charge you $20,000. Now, just take $20,000 and divide that by 120 checks. They're going to charge you $166 for every check that they write. Now, if you're smart enough to work and earn this money, why aren't you smart enough to keep it and invest it and take care of your own money for yourself? Why is it that the government is smart enough to take your money, pay you no interest, keep it for 45 years, spend it on the general budget, which is what they've been doing now for the last 20 years? There isn't a dime of the money, the surplus money from 82 to 2004 that's in the bank today. It's all been spent operating the government. And you mean to tell me that the government that hasn't been able to manage your money over the last 20 years is smarter and more able to manage it than you are? I mean, come on, boys and girls, it's time to wake up and smell the coffee. They've taken your money, they spent it, put IOUs in the Social Security Trust Fund, which isn't even a trust fund, and you call that sound financial policy? Even if you're a knockdown, drag-out, skid row bum, for crying out loud, at least you would have got a bottle of Ripple for your money rather than nothing, which is where you're headed. So you're going to be drawing out $60,000, and Social Security is going to charge you $20,000 to administer the fund. That is, assuming the amount that they charge you per month and the amount that you're paid per month go in at the same rates. Now, that's a condition which is increasingly unlikely to be met, and no insurance company, no pension fund in this country could take your money and pay you back anything less than you paid in. If you paid in $80,000, it'd have to pay you $80,000 back. Only Social Security is allowed to pay you back $2 out of every $3 that you pay in and take a third. And this is for those of you who earn just minimum wage. It gets worse if you earn more. Now think of that. You're going to pay in $80,000. They're going to charge you 25%, $20,000 of it. You're going to get $60,000 of it back. They'll charge you $20,000 to administer the fund. And they're not even administering the fund. That's because there's no fund to administer. There isn't a dime in Social Security. Not a dime. It's all been spent. You got a lot of IOUs in there. And it's going to be paid for out of the earnings and the taxes that are paid in, the premiums paid in, by future ratepayers. And there's fewer and fewer ratepayers going into the workforce and more recipients coming out and drawing the benefits. That's what the problem is. George Bush says he's going to solve that problem for you. Well, God bless him, and let's wish him, you know, let's wish him well in his endeavor. Meanwhile, back on the farm, I took a look at it and said, you know, the smartest thing I can do is get the hell out of here while I still can. You got my $12,000. I kept the other 140. I invested my 140. I took care of myself. And I'm suggesting that you do the same. Now, if you're in debt, there's this guy, Dave Ramsey, DaveRamsey.com, says he can get you out of debt. And I don't doubt but what he probably could. I teach a business school, and that's one of the first things that I go to work on, too. If you're in debt, you need to get out of debt. Ramsey says you need to get busy and work on this and pay it all off. He's opposed to bankruptcy. I'm not. I think bankruptcy is an extension of, it's a perversion of the year of release. All debts need to be released once every 7 years. We'll talk about this year of release and jubilee as we progress along. It's a part of God's plan in economics. You practice that plan, things work out a little better. So I'm not opposed to bankruptcy at all. In fact, it's written into our statutes to give you debt relief, and you can accomplish that in about 90 days. Of course, now once you go through bankruptcy, you lose all of your credit, And if you're living on credit, what are you going to live on? So you better learn these 23 laws before you file for bankruptcy. Be thinking ahead. Now, our presidential hopeful George W. Bush, who's just been reelected, wants to give low-income workers a 2% rebate on their Social Security taxes. That's about a 20% cut. And he keeps talking about this 20% of the money that you pay in. Well, the money your employer pays in doesn't count, evidently. So you can invest in your own retirement. Now, that means you'll have about $177 a year to invest. You take 2% of the money that you pay into Social Security, and that'll amount to $177 a year. Let me recommend lottery tickets, because the amount of money that you're going to win on the average at Powerball or Pick 3 can't be any worse than what the average unsophisticated investor is going to make in the stock, bond, or commodities markets. And I almost forgot that this cut in what you pay in will necessitate a cut in what you take out. You know, say 10% or better cut in the payouts, which means that in order to get your $177 a year in money to invest, you give up $600 a year in Social Security checks. You better hope that your lucky number comes in. So when I looked at this, I said, you know, Social Security was a bad idea. I bought into it in 1950. I paid into it for 28 years. You got my $12,000. I'm going to kiss it goodbye, chalk it up to experience. I did. I never looked back, and I've never been happier. I practice these 23 laws, and everything's working great. I'm not complaining about inflation. I'm not complaining about Social Security. I'm not complaining about income tax. No need to. I don't do business with government. You know, if you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. And I can't think of a bigger thief than government, unless maybe, you know, it's banking, insurance, or your church. Those three are close to second, third, and fourth. Now, let's look if you're a middle-income worker. And this is where the average blue-collar worker fits in. You're going to earn about $35,000 to $40,000 a year. Now, using the same formula, you're going to pay in about $5,600 a year in payroll and withholding taxes. Remember, the 16% is half from you and about half from your employer. You earn it all, though. You won't be paying, and he's not going to be paying you as much as he would otherwise to make up for all this money that he has to send in your name to the feds. So if you're getting, you know, $10 or $15 an hour, you could be making 20. Now, when I left International, I was making $3 an hour, and I went to work for myself, and I started charging $12 an hour, so I went from 3 to 12. I started making the whole enchilada. And here was the shock. When I left, and I went to work for this property management company, and the guy offered me $12 an hour as a contractor, and he said, no benefits. You don't get any health benefits, Social Security, nothing. No paid vacation. Now, look, I was a union member, man. I belonged to the International Association of Machinists. Wow, the card-carrying union man. Well, I had seniority. $3.27 an hour, what George Bush calls the security blanket or the safety net. God, I agonized over, do I want to leave my $3 an hour with my Kaiser Permanente health insurance, dental plan, retirement? Well, I finally said, yeah, I guess I'll be responsible, and I'll out of my $12 an hour, I'll have to pay all of that myself. And you know, there isn't one of you listening to me right now that couldn't do the same thing. There isn't anything George Gordon did that you can't do. It just takes a little getting used to. The concept of strict liability is so alien and foreign to us. Being responsible for ourselves doesn't fit in. The Kaiser Permanente should be responsible for my health, I thought. And my employer should be responsible for my retirement along with government and Social Security. George Gordon shouldn't be responsible for all those things, and indeed, I wasn't. But when I accepted that responsibility, I moved from $3 to $12, and I never looked back from that point on. All right, now let's take a look at your dollars that you're paying in here. Take a look at the amount that a self-employed person has to pay, and you'll see that it's double what a non-self-employed person is supposed to pay. Now, let's take that. It's 15.3%. So if you're self-employed, you're paying 15.3%. Now, take that same $5,600 a year and invest that in U.S. savings bonds at 5%. This means that over a 45-year period, you're going to end up with a principal and interest balance of $900,000, which is going to yield you about $45,000 a year, or nearly $4,000 a month forever, and you'd still have that same $900,000 to leave your children. Now, you're going to pay in the same amount of money, $5,600 a year. $5,600 times 45 years. That's $250,000. You're going to pay $250,000 in. And they're not going to pay you a dime's worth of interest. But they're going to give you about $1,000 a month for 120 months, about $120,000. So out of your $250,000, they're going to give you about half of it back at today's current law. So you're going to pay about 50% in administration costs. So Social Security is going to take your $5,600 a year over 45 years. That's $252,000. When you retire at age 65, you'll be eligible for payments of $804 a month. That's a total of $96,480 if you live to the average age of 75. Now, you just paid in $252,000. You took out $100,000. This means that the government is giving you back 38 cents on the dollar. Got that? They're going to give you back 38 cents out of every dollar you pay in. They're going to keep 62 cents. An insurance company would have to give you back at least the dollar that they took. The government's going to give you 38 cents. And you call this the third rail of politics? I say, where's the door? How do I get the hell out of here? That was my question. Clear back in the 1960s, I said, if I could get out of Social Security, I would. My granddad was opposed to Social Security. He got his number because he was an employee. He worked all of his life. He had to have the number to work. At least he thought he did. There's no money in employment. Who wants to go out here and work for International and get paid 25% of the shop rate? I don't care if you're a plumber, a carpenter, electrician, or what you are. Whatever that shop rate is what you're worth, because that's what the company's selling your time for. If you're a plumber and the shop rate is $50 an hour, that's what you're worth as a plumber. Now, what is the management paying you? Now, figure it out. You're making the $50 every time you go out there on a service call and the billing goes out. They're making $50 and they're paying you $25 or paying you $20. They make the payments and the balance of it's their profit. I mean, that's just where reality's at. Well, under Bush's proposed program, you'd end up with $560 a year to invest. And while this is better than before, and can allow you to set aside a nest egg of roughly $89,000 when you retire if you invest at 5% compound interest, you'll still be over $66,000 down from what you paid in or were made to invest. Now remember that 10%, that a 10% cut in your Social Security check, well, that means you're going to get about $10,000 less from the government over a 10-year period, and it raises your shortfall to about $75,000. Now the chances of you being able to raise the average return from 5% a year over 45 years to 10% a year on your investment in stocks over that same period, especially if you're untrained, is exactly zero. If you take a look right now at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, there's not a stock on there that's paying 5%. I mean, that's just where reality's at. I checked that Dow Jones out and made a report to you here on the air. I wouldn't get out of bed. You got the best stocks in the business, that's Walmart and Microsoft, they're not even paying dividends. You invest $10,000 in their companies, it's a $10,000 interest-free loan. What you're betting on, no dividends, what you're betting on is the value of the stock's going up. How much do you think the value of the stock's going up with the value of the dollar going down? You're losing purchasing power, so they're going to pay you more and more dollars. You're going to get more and more pieces of paper that buy less and less. That's what the bottom line is. Now, it gets better than that. Let's suppose investing that same amount of money at 5% interest over a period of 45 years gives you a principal balance, and at the end, you end up with $900,000. You got a $900,000 nest egg there to pass on in your inheritance. Now, we'll take a look at inheritance, because inheritance is a very important part of the 23 laws that God put into our economy, or into the economic plan that he devised and said, you follow this plan and you'll have wealth galore. If you don't follow this plan, you'll have poverty. Take a look around the world. The world is in poverty. The United States and the Western countries of Europe, Western European countries, are little islands in this sea of misery and poverty. And that's because we here in the Western world, we Anglo-Saxon Christians, do indeed practice some of these economic laws. Not many, but we do practice some of them. And from that, we get some benefits. Now get this. Now take a look at you professionals out there. You're in the high income bracket. That is, you're making $38 an hour, or at least a minimum of $76,200. Now you're going to be putting in $11,658 a year. And by the time you reach retirement age, you will have paid in a little over $500,000, $524,637. Now, when you invest that money in U.S. savings bonds at 5% interest over that same 45 years, you doctors, lawyers, and dentists, real estate brokers, you'd have $1,800,000 in the bank, which would yield you $93,000 a year, or about $7,500 a month forever, and you'd still have the same $1.8 million when you died. Social Security is not going to be paying you anywhere near $7,500 a month. The most you're going to get is $1,200. Under current law, $1,200. You and your wife together may get $2,400. Hell, you'd have $7,500. You have three times as much. Social Security is going to pay you $1,150 a month for being such a generous donor to the program. This means that if you live to be an average age of 75, you're going to collect $138,000. Now, let's remember, you just finished paying in over $500,000. If you thought that the low-income worker who got back 66 cents on the dollar or the middle-income worker that got back 38 cents on the dollar were bad, you're only getting back 26 cents on the dollar. As I said at the beginning, the more you make, the worse Social Security looks. The more you make, the worse the program is. Now, of course, you paid into it, and you're probably bound and determined that you're going to get your money out. That's what my dad said. He paid into it, and so he bought into the welfare scheme. He was working to get unemployment insurance and disability payments and anything he could get. He said, I paid into it, and I'm going to get my money back. I think you'd be better off. I know I was better off to stop paying in, stop doing business with the government, stop employment. I've said this many, many times. There's no money in employment. Now, if you want a job and you want to go out and work for somebody else, get after it. Don't let me get in your way. But there's no money in it. So then the alternative is self-employment. Now, let me tell you right now, there's no money in self-employment either. That's because you got to pay taxes. You want to get into the trades. You want to become a trader at law on a cash basis. Trader at law on a cash basis, dealing in gold and silver coin. Dealing in property, real property. Don't deal in stocks and bonds and negotiable instruments and mortgages and Federal Reserve notes and paper and debt. There's no money in that. It violates the law of God. And every time you violate the law, there's a penalty to pay. And these penalties are oftentimes invisible. And actually, they're pretty visible when you put a pencil and paper cut, just like Social Security. Now, in my tax and status school, this is one of the lessons that I teach is Social Security and why it's a bad deal. You're paying in 16% to Social Security and 17% in taxes. Now, add that up. Isn't that 33%? Couldn't you live better if you had a 33% pay raise? I had a guy here in school one time. He made $130,000 a year flying a 747 for Northwest Orient. And he complained about the amount of money that they were taking away from him. They were leaving him with about half, $65,000, $70,000 a year. And I said, well, how much were you making when you were flying the right seat? And he said, about $60,000 a year. I said, well, the truth of the matter is, you just moved over to the left seat. They paid you twice as much money, but they're only leaving you half of it. You haven't bettered yourself at all, flying the left seat or the right seat. So, bottom line is, it's a deception when your employer is making these payments for you. He's reduced you to value and taken you away from weights and measures, and that's what Leviticus 19, 35, and 36 is all about. Just weights and balances, not values. Don't be deceived by values. What you want is to get paid, and to get paid in just weights and measures. And I'm about out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll be back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about money is the root of all evil. You've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and the Law School, please go to the website georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. All right, I'm out of time. We'll see you next time, tomorrow night, same time, same station, right here. So until then, good night, friends.